member is Josephine Mabosh, Professor Sabina Isaac, Dr. Damir Frey, Professor Stuart Kent, Professor Seth Massey, and the National Advocate Simon Bala. There's other members who represent us. We have a register all the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, I'm looking at the page. I want to understand if that's the first time coming in some of these cultural comments. The importance of ensuring that who is in the meeting is that we don't want us to make a statement just as anything we are, we don't know what it's second. The process, all the processes of the commission that the national committee are doing the process. So, I think it should be the last one to come in before the presentation. If there are others that come in between the presentation, we will do that after we have done. But before we start, the delegate that you can come in and then we will do it.
Good morning. My name is Kate Sherry. I represent the Rural Health Advocacy Project, Rural Justice, and Rural Rehab South Africa.
So
you can start with Dr. Hand over to Dr. Carol Marshall, who will make the presentation.
There are two word documents that were sent to the portfolio committee, the strategic plan and the annual planning plan. That were both sent. These, the slides that I'm going to show are therefore related to the word documents. The outline of the strategic plan follows the standard template. And you can quickly see the outline, the headings there that we follow when we're submitting a strategic plan. We've completed that and we've completed the template that we would follow. So what we will do is go through the strategic overview across A and then the strategic objective. And the second presentation that we have is on the annual performance plan. In terms of the strategic overview, I think it also goes to start by simply remembering the mandate of the committee comes directly from the National Health Amendment Act that was actually signed into law, promulgated by the President in September last year, to protect and promote the health and safety of the users of health services by monitoring and increasing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards prescribed by the Minister in relation to the national health system, and ensuring the consideration, investigation, and disposal of complaints relating to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards, procedurally fair, economical, and expeditious.
I think yesterday we looked for documents and there was no documents in our given home. At least you were there and this morning. So may I please be provided with the documents?
Sorry for that, the phone was right.
Yes, it was.
Pardon, Madam Chair. We just want to check how many people do not have documents. So to make sure it was enough.
Are we all I think you can continue to look. Everybody is indicating that you do have documents.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry, Chair. My indication was that I don't have it.
Can I just check which document are we referring to? Are we referring to the consolidated site that is being, can I look?
This is the plan.
Or is that what you are not having? Okay. Are all members having the necessary document? Honorable Matias.
Madam Chair, only document at the disposal is the annual performance plan, not a strategic plan. Can you please be furnished with the strategic plan?
The other thing that I just can I, sorry, I think I have to come to the defense of the secretariat. The documents were submitted a long time ago. Yes, documents were submitted. I'm not quite sure what is the procedure with an alternate, but for permanent members of the committee, it's my understanding that documents were submitted. That is why I have sponsored my document that I'm having, which is a risk for me to chair a meeting without documents in front of me. But I have to take that risk. I don't have any other choice. I hope the Secretariat, as it is trying to assist us, I would then be given a document. I would appreciate if the board must not worry themselves about this. We are going to clean up our house. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. If everybody is having documents in front of her or him, indicate so that we are able to continue everybody being in the same page. Are we all comfortable? All of us have got documents? All right. Who then allow the two to continue. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. I am referring to page 8 of the strategic plan, if people, and I will then successively go through it. So this is the mandate of the office, which comes, as I said, from the National Health Amendment Act that was debated in this House in 2012 and 2013 and promulgated by the President into law in September 2013. So, it, as I said, it's about monitoring and enforcing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards prescribed by the Minister in relation to the National Health System and ensuring consideration, investigation and disposal of complaints relating to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards in a procedurally fair, economical and expeditious manner. Our vision and mission, you can see outlines there. Our vision is for safe and quality health care for all South Africans. And our mission is to act independently, impartially, fairly, and fearlessly in guiding, monitoring, and enforcing healthcare safety and quality standards in health establishments to serve the people of South Africa. Our values are informed by the South African Constitution and the Bartholdi principles and enshrine human dignity, freedom, and the achievement of equality, and that people must come first. And you can see the values of the office itself listed there. We have unpacked the mandate. If we are to protect and promote the health and safety of health service users, it implies that we must act as the champion of the public and of users, so so as to restore credibility and trust in the health system. We must respect healthcare users and their families, as well as healthcare staff. We must advocate for effectiveness in achieving health system change and social impact. We must strive for excellence, innovation, and efficiency in our own operations. We must be truthful, fair, and committed to honesty, to intellectual honesty. We must practice transparency, but in a context that respects confidentiality. We must achieve higher standards of ethical behavior, teamwork, and collaboration, and we must promote professionalism, compassion, diversity, and social responsibility. So these are the values of the office that have been captured in the strategic plan. There is then an extensive section, for those of you who are following the document, there's an extensive section that starts on page 9 of the legislative mandates of the office. That's the list of the different components of these mandates. The first is obviously the Constitution. We then go on to summarize the National Health Act, the key aspects of the National Health Amendment Act, other health-related acts that could impact on the operations of the office, and then other legislation. So I'll follow that order. The first is the constitutional mandate. Section 27 guarantees everyone the right of access to healthcare services, including reproductive health services and emergency medical treatment. It requires the state take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realization of this right. How this office takes its mandate from Constitution is that through regulating the quality of health services, this will enable and require health establishment to comply with these minimum standards of care and priorities and contribute directly to government's progressive realization of its constitutional obligations. Section 41 requires all three spheres of government to work cooperatively. So while national government is responsible for developing and monitoring policies, legislation, and norms and standards for health sector, so that is the mandate of this office. And provincial government remains responsible for the implementation of national policy and legislation. And Section 44 gives national government the authority to pass legislation with regard to functional areas of concurrent competence and to prescribe minimum norms and standards. So those to us were three of the key attributes of the Constitution that from which we take broad in our mandate. The National Health Act is our principal legislation. It defines a health establishment, and this is very key because this is the mandate of this office. The definition of a health establishment is in the National Health Act. That a whole or part of a public or private institution, facility, building, or place that is operated or designed to provide inpatient or outpatient treatment, diagnostic, or therapeutic interventions or health services. And all health establishments in relation to Section 47 must comply with the quality requirements and standards prescribed by the Minister after consultation with the office. And these may relate to human resources, health technology, equipment, hygiene. You can see the whole list of areas that the quality standards may relate to, including manner in which users are accommodated and treated. And the office must monitor and enforce compliance with the quality requirements and standards. This is from the principal legislation, the National Health Act. And Section 90 of the National Health Act, as amended by the Amendment Act, then provides for consultation by the Minister with the office, in addition to consulting with the National Health Council, where the Minister makes regulations in terms of this Act. And the Minister may prescribe different types of norms and standards for different types of health establishments after consultation with the relevant authorities. And there you can see a list of the regulations which the Act empowers the Minister to prescribe. Namely fees to the office for services rendered, the norms and standards, the functions of the board and the office, and because the National Health Amendment Act included the provision for the transfer of port health services in the same Amendment Act, it also contains the empowered the Minister to issue regulations relating to environmental health. Perhaps I should just say up front that even though the two things were contained in the same Amendment Act, because they had originally been in the same chapter of the National Health Act that was amended, the office does not have any direct role in the administration of the National Health regulations or the appointment of health officers, because I know that that is something that has caused confusion in the past. It's because the same chapter of the National Health Act was amended. It was amended through, by means of the National Health Amendment Act, which made minor amendments throughout the National Health Act, but essentially replaced Chapter 10. It is Act number 30, number 12 of 2013, and there you can see again the mandate. You can see where it comes from, Section 78 of the National Health Amendment Act. I just wanted to point out, sorry, if we just focus on the two main words of the mandate, the office is to protect and promote the health and safety of users. What we then did was to unpack that mandate by reflecting on the fact that protect implies the protection of users from harm. And we have included definitions on what is meant by health, safety, and users. Promote, on the other hand, implies a much more active role in ensuring that quality and safety are implemented through our health services. So the office actually has a dual role, to protect from harm, but also to promote health and safety. There are a couple of slides which highlight the functions of the office. This comes from the respective sections in the document that you have received from pages 11 and 12. It's quite detailed. I don't think I'm going to read all of it. This is straight from the Act. So there the functions are to advise the Minister on norms and standards, to inspect and certify health establishments, to investigate complaints, and to monitor indicators of risk as an early warning system. The office must also identify areas for intervention and make recommendations to various authorities in both public and the private sector to ensure compliance with norms and standards, publish information relating to norms and standards, recommend improvement quality assurance and management systems to the minister, and then keep records and advise the minister on any other matter referred to it. The office, in addition, has some more discretionary functions. The earlier ones were mandatory. The more discretionary functions of office, once again, straight from Section 79 of the National Health Amendment Act, to issue guidelines on the implementation of norms and standards, collect or request any information from either health establishments or users related to norms and standards, liaise with other regulatory authorities on matters of common interest and receive information from them, and negotiate agreements with regulatory authorities. This office, as you are probably aware, contains a health standards ombuds who is placed within the office, uses staff seconded by the office but reports to the minister, and these are the functions of the ombuds. Following a written or verbal complaint or on the ombuds own initiative, the ombuds may investigate and consider non-compliance with norms and standards. This may involve an act or omission by a person in charge of or employed by a health establishment or any facility or place providing a health services. The mandate of the ombud is broader because obviously complaints relating to health services may not always originate in formally registered health establishments. The ombud uses the staff of office and has very wide specified powers in the Act, including subpoena, but must have due regard for administrative and procedural fairness. Once again, the ombud may refer any complaint to any other relevant body. This, I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that Section 18 of the National Health Act relating to the obligation of provinces to set up a system for complaints is not repealed. It is still in place. So the obligation of provinces is not transferred to the ombud. Provinces must still manage complaints systems. However, patients have the right to raise complaints with the ombud, who may then refer the complaints to the provinces or to other relevant bodies. The ombud provides their findings and recommendations to the CEO, who must then take action. And on conclusion, the ombud must inform the complainant or the respondent or both of their findings and recommendations. So that, in summary, is the functions of the office of the ombud. The next slide simply summarizes from the Act the key powers that the office has in order to give effect to its mandate. It has powers relating to the appointment of inspectors and their credentialing, the powers of inspectors to enter establishments, the powers of the ombud to require information to be provided to him or her, the method of recommendations of the ombud, the issuing of compliance notices, the issuing of compliance certificates, and the use of progressive sanctions. I haven't gone into this in detail, but this is all the mandate that is contained in Act from which the strategic plan derives its direction. The other legislation that is listed quite extensively in the strategic plan, from page 12 onwards, is firstly, there is an extensive range of legislation, for instance, the Medicines and Related Substances Act, the Laboratory Service, the Health Professions Act. All of these would strengthen mandate of inspectors. So as they inspect health facilities, they can also require compliance with other acts, and it does make important coordination with other regulators. On the right-hand side are the standard legislation which relates to all entities, such as the basic conditions of employment. All establishments are required to comply with this, so once again it strengthens the mandate of inspectors to ensure compliance, but it also places an equal obligation on the OHSC as an employer, as an institution, to comply with this basic legislation. The policy mandates of the office, the more direct policy mandates, there may obviously be additional more indirect ones. There is a national quality, policy on quality in healthcare, which was actually drawn up in 2001, although it was reissued in 2007, so it is fairly old. There is the patient rights charter, which was developed in the health sector based on vital care principles, and you can see the outline of the patient rights charter, which the standards that I'll talk a little bit about follow very, very closely. Then the national core standards for health establishments in South Africa, that is a document which we are making arrangements to have all the documentation related to this provided to the portfolio committee. This was published in 2011 after approval by the National Health Council, and it defines expected performance for the delivery of safe and decent care in South Africa. It is structured into 7 cross-cutting domains that cover major areas of risk to quality and safety in health establishments, and a subset of those national core standards are what I think the whole country now calls Minister 6 priorities, which are the cleanliness, the waiting times, the attitudes of staff, patient safety, the infection prevention and control, and the availability of medicines and supplies. The Green Paper relating to national health assurance also specifies that a certificate of compliance from the office will be a prerequisite for future national health insurance funding. So that is a summary of the most critical policy documents. I will then move on to the second section, which starts on page 18 of the document, which is the performance delivery environment of the office in terms of the situation analysis. The National Health Development Plan focused at length on quality challenge and makes specific mention of the office. So it highlighted some of the fact that the health system is failing and that there are gaps in resources and knowledge. There is a poor relationship with the private sector, there is silo-based management, and there is a public perception of substandard care, especially the National Development Plan said within the primary healthcare system. I allude once more to the national core standards, which have been distributed over the last, as I said, over the last 3 years. We have actually been conducting inspections of compliance with these, and we have also highlighted through this process that there is poor accountability with a lack of consequences for non-compliance in the health system. Until the national core standards were issued, there were multiple standards and no objective measurements. So there were no actual set of national standards which gaps these national standards were designed to fill, and it has also become apparent that there are gaps in basic knowledge and competence in management throughout the system. So this highlights the challenges that this process and the strategic plan is designed to meet. These are the strategies that the Office of Health Standards Compliance has developed in order to meet those challenges. The first is to provide guidance to the system. And this will be achieved through a single set of national standards, through setting out expectations of managers, so what is my job, and through creating a framework and common understanding of what is actually expected. The second is through measurement, the benchmarking. There is a detailed assessment tool that measures compliance with these standards. They are measured through objective external methods using a team of inspectors. And immediate feedback is provided to all health establishments at the conclusion of an inspection. The third strategy is through ensuring improvement or correction. This is not the mandate of office. This is the mandate of the health service delivery authorities, either private or public. There have been a major effort led by government to respond to what has been found in terms of the assessments. There is also support coming from NGOs. And the major requirement is that there are bottlenecks in the system that are stopping health establishments from correctly delivering services. And what this component, which I must again, this isn't our job, but it's a major strategy which the office would be recommending to the department needs to be implemented, would be to actually correct those bottlenecks. And the last major strategy which I'll focus on from now on is that of regulation, because this is really the key mandate of the office. So what is that regulatory response? The rationale of regulation is really in order to change behavior using the powers of the state. So it is it recognizes that earlier strategies to try to change behavior were not successful, and in the previous term of government it was therefore determined that the power of the state needed to be put to bear on the health system in order to enforce the compliance with minimum norms and standards. What the office has been working on is two sets of regulations, because the Act already exists, in terms of the powers of the office to advise the minister on what should be prescribed and how the office and the board will function. We have drafted two sets of regulations which will actually go to the minister within the next couple of days. The first is about how the board and the office will function and what will be the requirement placed on health establishments. For instance, in terms of reporting, in terms of allowing access to inspectors, in terms of receiving the reports, and in terms of implementing corrective action. And it also sets out how the office will behave, what will the office do, and how will it carry out its mandate. The second is the very first function, which is to advise the minister on the norms and standards to be prescribed. The national health standards that I spoke about will form the basis of this, but there's been an extensive review and updating of those standards. The board has taken a decision that the scope of the first set of regulatory standards will apply to both, well, they will advise the minister because the office doesn't issue regulations, but they would apply to the private and public sectors together. A single set of standards to hospitals and clinics operating in the public and private sectors, and that they would be for performance-based, as are the national standards. They would set out what must be achieved. The current environment, of course, the strategic plan does ask us to reflect on what is the current environment in which we're operating. There has been consistently, since the start of this process, very strong political and senior management leadership for the process. Throughout, the Minister and the Director General personally have actually led this process forward. The national core standards have already begun to be mainstreamed into the operations of the department, realizing that they're going to have to become compliant. So it's having an impact on budgets, it's having an impact on job descriptions and performance agreements, which are increasingly based on the requirements of the national core standards. In terms of role players and stakeholders, I must say that at the very beginning, there had been some discussion around roles. We do hope that some of this initial contestation has now been erected. For instance, one example was laboratories, which were subject to another set of regulations. And that is why you may recall when I spoke earlier about Section 90, about the issuing of regulations, it states, after consultation with regulatory authorities. So that's written into legislation to deal with these issues. But when we went through the process, the legislative process of taking the National Health Amendment Bill through two houses, there was very widespread support for this concept. And there is also widespread support on the ground, but there are challenges with the management and support systems. How do we see the office impacting? I am on page 23 of the document for those of you who are following. If the office were to be successful, we can see that it would have two types of outcomes. it would improve how well healthcare is delivered. So in health terminology, we talk about reliability. That means you may have set of guidelines to follow, but do you actually follow them? So if the office is to be successful, there will be improved reliability and availability of care, and this will result in improved outcomes. So there will be less preventable mortality through kind of mistakes that can happen within healthcare systems. So that we refer to as patient safety. Also, in relation to the implementation of universal healthcare coverage, which you may recall the minister has made quality a key attribute of the universal access to universal healthcare coverage, is the acceptability of care to patients. So do patients perceive and experience the care that they are receiving as being acceptable and of an acceptable quality? It would also result in improved efficiency and accountability of healthcare organizations, which is why it is linked to the National Health Insurance Funding. Through strengthening the accountability in health establishments, when I use the word incentives there, I don't mean paying out money. I mean if it is linked to performance management, it will obviously change the way that managers perceive the need to comply with standards. Also through knowledge and guidance, through control systems and practices which need to be introduced into health establishments, and through indirectly requiring the system to function. Why is it indirect? Is because this office only has a mandate over health establishments, has no mandate over district, provincial or national offices. But through requiring change of health establishments, it is anticipated that it impacts indirectly on how the system supports health establishments. This is simply to highlight to you that this has been a very long journey, that it started in 2008. You can see the summary up to 2013, both in terms of standard and audit tools and in terms of legislation and regulation. I'm not even going to attempt to read it. But now in 2014, I think this is now a new phase. The second component of the, and you can see that on page 24 of the plan. The second component of the strategic plan, that was discussing the performance environment. The second component of the strategic plan is discussing the organizational environment. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats. A preliminary one was conducted in preparing a business case for the establishment of a public entity. This is not comprehensive, and I know the board has already started making refinements and contributions to this. Some of the strengths of the office would be that it is a new health sector public entity, a regulator with legislative authority. It is also independent. There is an independent board and an independent ombud. And it has gone through a significant period of development and awareness. So a lot of what I'm talking to you about today is already common knowledge throughout the health system, both public and private. However, there are weaknesses. The powers to enforce compliance are fairly limited because the constitutional setup of the country does not give a national body direct authority enforcement powers. Any body such as this has limited ability to correctly predict problems and intervene through an early warning system. This is an international experience, is that you're never on top of everything. Healthcare is a very, very complex business, very, very high risk. Something can always go wrong. No entity, either this or any other international entity can ever predict everything. So it will happen that the office will say, that seems like a fairly good institution, only for there to be something dreadful happen the next day. That is, it's impossible to predict every single thing that can go wrong. But what we are hoping is that it will start shifting the performance profile of institutions so that the kinds of things that go wrong will become less frequent. The other weakness is that there may be a perceived lack of independence because this process was incubated within the National Department of Health and is only now in the process of moving out. There are major opportunities. I've alluded already to the very strong political support for this, and the public expectations are very, very high. And it is, there is a favorable context for this body to start work now. There is a clear expectation of its role within the National Development Plan where it is specified. However, it is possible that there could be a perception of interference. That could extend not just to influencing the findings and the decisions, but even to influencing the selection. Because, in a sense, you can't have enforcement practice against you if you get below the radar. So the issue of selection is very, very important. There could be resistance from establishments or authorities who may not be willing to comply with the standards or may feel they're unable. And part of that is the issue of concurrent powers, disagreements with other regulators, and even other legislation. So that's a summary of some of the environment. I'll just go very briefly through the establishment of the OHSC. It was listed in May. The board was inaugurated, as the chairperson has already said, in January. It's been a very, very active board. The board has already met four times since January, and the three board committees have already each met three times. I think it's actually even more since the it really is an extremely dedicated board. A board constitution and code of conduct has already been approved. The CEO was appointed on an interim basis from the 1st of April. A formal MOA has already been signed between the National Department of Health and the office in order to enable the transition to take place, and systems, structures, and policies are already being set up. This is a highlight of, this is the organizational environment. So the highlight is that this is a single national entity, not provincial, but it could, at some point when it, the size justifies, it could be regional, but at this moment there is only a single national office. The key units are the inspectorate, the ombuds. I'll show you this in a minute, I'll show you the slide. There are critical support units, and the ombuds is appointed by and reports to the minister on the advice of the board, but does not report to the board, but is placed within the office and uses the staff of the office. The management of complaints is one of the functions of the office, but the findings of the ombuds are independent. There you can see the board. So the board reports to the minister. There is an EXCO, Executive Committee of the Board, and you can see the three committees that have been defined, the Audit, Risk and Finance Committee, Human Resources and Remuneration Committee, and the Certification and Enforcement Committee. The Board is the accounting authority in terms of the Act. It has, the role is oversight and governance, the approval of policies and plans, the appointment of the CEO, and the approval of executive management. So significant work has already, as I said, been done by the board. And there you can see the approved organizational structure, and has in fact now, as specified in the Act, it's been approved by both the board and the minister. The minister has now approved this organizational structure. But I won't go into detail. The next section is that of partnerships in the strategic plan template. We've split the partners into primary and important, but not as primary. The primary stakeholders in this in the work of the office are the health establishments. They are the regulated entities, and in the health establishments, it includes both managers and staff members, because they are people who will or will not ensure compliance. The head offices, I already alluded to them, they are important stakeholders, but they are not regulated entities. The other primary stakeholder are the users of health establishments, and it's their safety that must be protected and promoted by the office. We would also include their families. Other partners in organizations, first are those who are interested in the regulation of healthcare services. And at the very top of that list would be Parliament and the other structures of accountability. Other regulators would obviously also be important stakeholders or partners, as well as the National Department of Health. There are also stakeholders who influence or have an interest in how health services are provided. We would include their professional association, trade unions, associations of hospitals, academic and training institutions, and certain NGOs that actually deliver services. and then those that represent the interests of healthcare consumers, mass-based civil society structures, NGOs that focus on health rights and advocacy, and consumer bodies. And in both of these, you will see that we have put the mass media running alongside all of these partners, because the mass media, we would like to see them as our ally. They are obviously extremely interested in the work of the office and in the work that the office focuses on, in the problems that the office is seeking to redress. The strategic plan has been developed largely based on a business case that was developed by the incubator organization within the National Department of Health. It was called the Office of Standards Compliance. But there have been significant inputs from the board since their first meeting in March. However, I would like to emphasize, and it was made clear in the forward to document, that this is the very first strategic plan that this office has developed. And as such, it is obviously it is in a changing environment and context, because even the regulations have not yet been published for comment. So it is coming right in right at the very start of a process. On page 13 of the document, you will see the table that is projected there, which are the strategic outcome-oriented goals of the office. What we have tried to do here is to reflect what obviously would be the change in state as a result of the work of the office. The first two are very outwardly focused. They reflect, first of all, that public health establishments should comply with norms and standards for health and safety and the provision of quality, compassionate, and responsive care. So this would be the goal, the outcome, of the work of the office. The second is the public is both protected through ensuring that poor care and their situations of concern are heard, responded to, and corrected. So the two real dual roles of the office is to ensure compliance by health establishments, but to ensure that the public has a voice. The third is that there is collaboration with other institutions in terms of both sharing information and ensuring coordinated regulation. And then the fourth is the internal goal that relates to the function of the office. So those are the four strategic outcome-oriented goals that we have developed for the office. I will then unpack each of them. There is a table on page 34. The first one is the goal that health establishments should comply with norms and standards to protect and promote the health and safety of users through providing care that meets those requirements. We've developed six objectives underneath that goal, six strategic objectives. That different types of norms and standards for different types of health establishments are developed and or revised for submission to the Minister for Promulgation. That all health establishments obligated by these standards are registered annually, because we need to know who we have to regulate. That guidance is provided to them on compliance. That compliance is monitored and inspected at least every 4 years, and relevant action is taken. That health establishments found to be compliant are certified, but that those who are persistently non-compliant are subject to enforcement action. So those are the six strategic objectives under that goal. Under the goal of responsiveness to the public, that an accessible mechanism for lodging of complaints with OHSC is in place and widely disseminated, widely known, that complaints regarding non-compliance are properly managed, that the findings and recommendations are issued within agreed time frames, that the recommendations made by the Ombuds are monitored and enforced. The Act requires that the office monitor whether the recommendations of the Ombuds are actually being carried out. The office must also monitor indicators of risk. This is where the office will need to have a communication channel that will enable it to understand in advance where things may be going wrong, so that the office can both, for instance, carry out inspections, or the Ombud can carry out an investigation, and the Act requires that serious breaches are reported to the Minister. And then lastly, that the office publish the information so the public knows what's going on. The third goal is collaboration with other entities to enhance quality and compliance. There are three objectives there: that memoranda of agreement are signed with relevant regulators and other organizations, that there is a platform for information sharing, and that coordinated activities and enforcement are implemented, so that it's more difficult for things to slip through the cracks or for duplication to arise. And lastly, the standard, the establishment of office itself. I must say that this at the moment is an all-consuming objective, because setting up a brand new entity is quite challenging. So that the office needs to be fully functional and staffed, that staff training and development, including the accreditation of inspectors, is implemented, that financial management and the requirements of the PFMA are complied with, that there is a customized IT system, which will be the heart of this organization. It will be extremely information dependent. And, but not forgetting that public and provider awareness on what is this office needs to be created. And that is the end of part A. There is then a summary. I don't know if you want me to just continue to part B of the strategic plan, which starts on page 35. And this is more sort of details, targets, money, and the budget program.
Thank you. Can I check with honorable members if you want to pause and get some benefits before we go into part B, which is the figures, or you want them to continue and then after they are done with the presentation, then I think the Lord is saying continue, then they will come with the questions after that. Thank you, Chair.
On page 35 of the document, here in slide, you can see the summary of the budget that has been allocated. This year, the budget allocated is 76 million. It does grow next year to 97 million. The top rows indicate the allocation to different budget programs. You can see that corporate services, because that is where major expenditure items such as offices, rental, furniture, IT systems all fall there. That is why that expenditure is quite high. That's all the basic nuts and bolts of the functioning of the office. The compliance inspectorate is the biggest operational program, because that is where the staff are employed. We at the moment have over 40 staff that are in the process of being shifted. Functions are being shifted to the new office. The complaints management section at the moment is quite small because Ombud has not yet been appointed. So we do realize that there will need to be some adjustments and some review once the Ombud is appointed. But the numbers will not be as big as the compliance inspectorate, because the compliance inspectorate must inspect health establishments out in the field. The office of the Ombud, according to the Act, must have its own money voted by Parliament. So that is the actual office of the Ombud. You can see it is a very small amount this year because, as I said, the Ombud has not been appointed. So you would need to put those 2 months together to see the complaints management budget together. The health standard design analysis and support function, that is really, it has all of three of those functions in order to try and be more cost effective. So it's responsible for both new standards as well as the analysis of data as well as providing the guidance. And then if you look at the standard line items, you can see that the amount on staffing this year is smaller because we are still in the process of the organogram. Was actually, I got the approval from the minister last week, and we are now in the process of finalizing the design of posts and the advertising. By next month, I think there will be a large number of adverts in the press. So that is actually compromising to some extent our ability to spend that money. The payments for capital assets are obviously very high in this year, because this is the year in which the office will be setting up its own offices and furnishing and equipping them. So that, in summary, is the table of the allocated budget for the 3 years that start in this year. This just goes through each of the budget programs, which I highlighted to you. I might just say the Treasury has informed us that we are not allowed to split the CEO's office and corporate services. So we have done already the submission to Treasury for next year's MF, and from next year we are going to have to put these two budget programs together. So this is the CEO's office. You may recall the structure that under the CEO's office falls communications, the board secretary, and the certification and enforcement unit. So you can see there the objectives from the different goals that this office will be delivering on or responsible for. I might add that we have very deliberately not written a separate set of goals and objectives for different budget programs. This is because the unit, the entity is quite small, and it will have to work in a coordinated manner in order to deliver. So you can see that some of the objectives are from goal 1, some are from goal 4, and some are from goal 3 in the CEO office. I don't know that I need to read them. It's just fetched the objectives from the different goals that I've already presented to you. So the CEO's office is responsible for certification and enforcement directly, for awareness and for regulatory coordination and for information to the public. And you can see there's a summary of budget, which you will also see in the document. And the CEO's office goes up to page 37, the top of page 38 in your document. So we've just summarized the budget on the slides. It is all there in the document that we handed out to you. The second is corporate services. And you can see that this basically picks up 4 of the 5 objectives under that goal of setting up the office, because this really is what corporate services needs to do, is to set up the office. Other units need to contribute to this. You can see the 4 objectives there, that the function, the setup and the staffing, including the officers, staff training and development, including of inspectors, financial management and IT system. You will also see the budget at the side. The amount of goods and services, the very high amount of goods and services you can see there, reflects the basically setting up of systems, of the operating systems. The third budget program is the compliance inspectors. As I said, this is the largest in terms of the staff complement. The goods and services budget there is largely related to travel, because they travel all over the country all the time. You can see the objective there. So they are prime contributors to, of the key contributors to the inspections, monitoring and inspections. They contribute to certification. This is an objective that is a dual objective. They contribute because they recommend. They also make recommendations around enforcement. We have, however, split these two objectives between two units, because in order to ensure that it's not a single unit that actually determines right through, from inspection right up to enforcement. So enforcement is actually then taken up by the unit in the CEO's office. So establishments get a more objective hearing. And the inspectorate will actually be working closely together with other regulators. So the coordinated regulation, and then lastly, the training of inspectors will be very important, including the accreditation. Complaints management and ombuds, they must make sure that there is an acceptable and accessible mechanism established, so that people who may not otherwise have access to such systems will have access, that there needs to be an efficient complaint management system. Very important that the ombuds provide the findings and recommendations. They would provide this both to CEO as well as to the complainant directly. And the ombuds will need to coordinate investigations with other bodies as well. Many times what we find is that complaints arise in a circumstance where both the health establishment, the system, as well as the individual provider or professional. It's often, it's not just either or. It may be both. Lastly, this very complex unit of health standards design analysis and support, which is responsible for developing the norms and standards for proposal to the minister or revising them, and would tap into an expert committee or several in order to do this. The registration of health establishments, so the inspectorate knows what they need to inspect. The guidance that would be provided, because that's where this unit is placed. And also, most importantly, the monitoring of the indicators of risk. that would then guide the prioritization of inspections. I just wanted to say before we conclude on behalf of the board that this is the very first strategic plan of a new public entity. I don't know who wants to conclude, please. I think it would be more appropriate. Thank you.
What we will do, which is always said, thank you very much for the presentation. What the practice is that we'll then, after the presentation, we allow honourable members to ask questions, clarities, make comments, and if after that, you will then, among yourselves, who is to answer for this, who is to answer for that, who's to give a response on an issue. So it's all up to you. If it is to be the presenter, it's fine. If there are matters that the chairperson is supposed to respond to, it's okay. So it's the chairperson of the committees, it's fine. But now, after this presentation, we will allow honorable members. If there are issues in the event that there are questions that are coming from honorable members, you feel that there is a gap that needs to be closed, you will do that when you respond. So thank you very much for the presentation. You'll get AVET is you'll get the AVET as you move forward. It's your first encounter with the portfolio committee. So now, honorable members, there is the presentation. Questions, clarities, comments? I see your hand is up. I'm not quite sure whether you are allowed to ask a question because you are a guest. Okay, all right. In the order.
Thank you, Chair. You're welcome to the committee. It's a pity that you are a new committee and it's the first time we meet. Maybe some of the things will be brought about by experience and interactions with you. I see that the something that you emphasize about lack of basic management skills. I mean, this is a new department, and you employed people for their expertise, I suppose. And now you say they are not, they don't have management skills. It's a contradiction in itself. Maybe you can explain that. And already you are having alliances or signing agreements with NGOs and with the press. Are they embedded, the press? Or I thought that the press duty to ferret information. You don't have to embed them in your operations so that maybe you give them, what you call it, handouts or... I don't know. I just need some clarity here before I go into other questions. Thank you.
No, thank you. And welcome the new board, the new entity, and the presentation that we've made. Just few clarities. I'll juggle around the strategic plan and the ADP as I move on. Well, firstly, I'm glad that you on page day four you did reflect that PFMA is one requirement that you're going to, it's one law that you're going to use to comply with. I'm raising this in the context that under your other legislations, you have not mentioned it as one of the legislations that will derive mandate from a financial management point of view. It's missing
in the strategic plan is one of the key is one of the key acts or legislations that must guide you in performing some of your duties and responsibilities. But I'm saying I'm covered because on page 34 you have raised it as one of the under your goals. As part of the objectives that you're going to use, ensure that it's efficient, effective management of finances. The issue I want to raise is around your programs. I'm getting confused because when you look at page 35 and also on page 6 of the APP, you seem to have 6 programs, but as you go on, the program becomes 5. And it gets confusing me because even in presentation, that's where ombudsman you put it in brackets as if it's a stepchild. You seem not sure where it belongs, according to the presentation and according to your programs, because it is reflected as an office, as a program somewhere, but as you go on somewhere, it becomes part of complaints management and ombudsman. Somewhere you put it in brackets. So I'm not sure what exact does that mean. Exactly whether you still not yet made your mind in terms of where exactly must you all otherwise you locate the ombudsman within your organizational structure. The second issue is around the issue of the bulk of the budget going to program two corporate, but it's not, there are no plans, it's nothing. It's just a budget. And somewhere we are saying it's because there's no staff personnel. When you look at the budget as compensation of employees, my understanding is that it might not have personnel now, but for the method that was budget for it, it means you are going to employ, you might have maybe started employing, and therefore in the process, therefore they will be expected to perform some duties. You can't employ people and then go to the office and sit. Because in the APT they are not reflected what is it once they are employed they are expected to do. I'm not sure that is intention that you will employ them, they will sit in the office until next financial year. Maybe it's only next financial year after we have employed them, in this financial year they will start performing. My expectation was that you have targets for them. As soon as they're employed, they start working. They not wait for because the implication, if one reads it, is that no, this program too will not be doing anything. Will not be doing anything except having salaries and wages and having goods and services. But goods and services must be. There must be target for it, so that even if you want to do an oversight, we must understand what is it that you will be doing on program two from an oversight perspective, which in this case in relation to your APP, it's very, very silent on it. And then in some of your I'll say in the office of the CEO, for example, there's somewhere where in the strategic plan you talk about public awareness, and then but in the APP it's not there. Does that mean you won't have public awareness this financial year? You'll only start maybe sometimes back. the other area of concern is that one of the weaknesses is the issue around the enforcement. I'm not sure exactly, because my own understanding is that one of the your responsibility is to make sure that there is enforcement as well. Are you saying you are disempowered by the law? The current legislation doesn't empower you to enforce. Is that the correct interpretation? And lastly, the issue around the question of the somewhere where you've written where some of your target is you've said quarterly, but you are saying on each quarter is not applicable in some of the AGP, somewhere, but you're saying your target is quarterly, which means the expectation that on a quarterly basis you must report. But as you reflect on a quarter, what is it that you'll be reporting? You're saying no, not applicable. I'm not sure exactly. What exactly does that mean? If that can be clarified, so that at least we get it clarity, so that we know when playing an oversight, what expectation, what does it mean when you say not applicable? When you say nil, what exactly do you mean, and what is expected to be done? And the same way, you just have to clean the document, because it has some weaknesses. Where it doesn't talk properly because of some of the grammar and all other related matters. And last on page 13, for example, you are saying 4.21 strategic objective annual target for 20XX. I don't know what does it mean, 20XX. Whether you still have made your mind, which year are these strategic objective annual targets for which year? Because somewhere this cut and paste somewhere, and because some of the mistakes that you find on the other side, the same mistake you find on the other side, it means there's been a transportation of some information from this side to this side. And there's still some due diligence work that still needs to be done in the document itself. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Formic.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you also for the presentation. It was very informative. Just got a few questions related to, firstly, national core standards, domains, and then one or two additional questions. Now, if you look at those seven domains of the national core standards, that's patient safety, clinical support services, public health, leadership and governance, operations management and facilities and infrastructure. I mean, those are pretty comprehensive. But I just want to focus on three, actually, very quickly. In terms of patient rights, you've mentioned that, you know, you're partnering, for example, with NGOs, and obviously I would see that would include patient advocacy groups. But what seems to be missing is the service user or the patient's voice throughout the process. So, for example, how are you going to ensure that the patient's perspective will be woven into your assessments? Because that's critical. And even having a patient representative or a patient advocacy representative on your board, I mean, you may or may not have that already, but that's something to think about. You may have that. So that's the first question. The second question links to the domain of leadership and governance. The fundamentals of effective leadership and oversight and accountability, I just would be curious in terms of what the indicators are for those, and also do any of them speak to the functional hospital boards, because we know we've got many challenges in that area. Then the study of the domain of public health. It was mentioned earlier that we don't want to think in terms of silos, but we know that within public health there are many activities that touch on, for example, social development, basic education, etc. So we may be holding health establishments accountable for functioning in subdomains and public health that they don't really have control of because they are reliant on partners out with health. And how are you going to manage that challenge? Then two more questions. One is, you know, there is this concern of perception of not being arm's length enough, because, you know, you have to be an independent decisor. And being within the Department of Health, at least, you know, in terms of the public perception, may be a challenge. An ideal scenario could have perhaps been one in which there was a reporting or management of complaints done within the department, but maybe a reporting to performance management and evaluation department within the presidency. That would have been an interesting scenario, but a bit of as it may, what are you going to do to alleviate the concerns the public might with regards to the independence or lack, potential lack of independence of the OSS? And then finally, in terms of the challenge you mentioned about the lack of the ability to enforce, well, any NHI dispensation, if non-compliance will result in a potential lack of NHI funds, that is a powerful mechanism of enforcement. And so the question would be, and this is perhaps thinking ahead of it, you know, if you have a small health establishment in a well-resourced area, you can perhaps squeeze, you know, by using that mechanism. But if you have, you know, a larger health establishment in an under-resourced area that is not meeting standards, because that's an under-resourced to begin with, and you use that mechanism, that could have a disastrous effect. So how are we going to mitigate those kind of challenges? Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also congratulate the board for the presentation. Just a few questions. My first question would be, how often do they do the quality checks in the institutions? And from the previous inspections that they did, which institutions, in your opinion, really need some check-up, you know, where there is no serious compliance? That's the first question. The second question relates to page 21 of the strategic document. I think it's paragraph, the last paragraph before 6.1.3. And it says, however, in too many cases, progress has been slow and non-existent, and the situation is even deteriorated with little or no support offered by local management. In other cases, the problems are seen to lie above the institutions themselves, with poor procurement, failure to deliver basic inputs, absence of policies and protocols, and lack of delegation to enable managers to manage. It is said that in this situation, it is difficult to be able to take effective action. Now, the question would be, having identified those critical areas for effective service delivery of the institutions, what remedial action have you put in place for this institution to correct this particular situation? And have you received feedback with regards to progress with regard to that? The other question would be the NHI pilot sites. In your observations, are they meeting the required standards, all the pilot sites? Are they meeting the required standards as prescribed by yourselves? The other issue would be, are you, in your own observation, seeing improvement with regard to the six most critical areas for patient-centered care? For example, the issue of staff attitude, are we seeing some progress and change with regard to that? Are we seeing the reduction of long waits in hospitals and clinics? Are we beginning to see some of our institutions being spotless and clean and tidy? Are the staff, the patient protected, or is still the situation where people just get into the hospital and shoot patients or shoot staff and so on and so forth and kill them? The issue of cross infections and so on and so forth. And my last question would be, while you appreciate that you're a new board, the question would be, are you really equal to the task with regard to the implementation and monitoring of the national service delivery agreements between the president and the minister? and what the things have you put in place to make sure that those agreements are actually implemented. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Dan.
Thanks, Sebastian. Chair, I think on page 24, the last column where it says 2014 proposed regulations developed for submission to the minister, both were inaugurated 29 January, is incomplete. And the office listed as public entity as a letter from NQF of Sydney is incomplete. And I think with regards to page 25 on the witnesses, partly I'm covered by Member Mahlalela regarding the bullet where it says limited powers to enforce compliance. You know, I was just right that why do you establish an office if that office won't have powers? So if maybe the doctor can explain into detail on what does that mean. I'm sure if she can explain all these bullets into detail so that at least we can get clarity. And then on page 26, the CEO has been appointed by the board and the minister by secondment from the ND Department, National Department of Health, effective from 1 April 2015. And the issue of the ombudsman also. But I'm worried that, you know, there are no time frames. And if we are serious that this office must be fully functional, these critical posts must be filled. You know, whilst the doctor was presenting, she mentioned that maybe by next month some of the posts will be filled. But, Chairperson, I don't think we need to leave it like that. The board must give us the exact time frame on when are they going to fill all the posts. Starting with the CEO and the ombudsman issue. But also there's a part whereby they say there's an outstanding sign off approval by the minister. I'm not sure when is the board going to make a follow-up on that final approval according to the Act, as they said in their document. At least they understand where am I. Yeah. Chair, I think Member Matala has covered me in terms of Program 2. Where they talk of compensation of employees, I was thinking, you know, that maybe they had temporary workers. That's why they had they have these payments. So, but at least maybe if they can explain to us on what are they talking about, because I take it that this is a new office that they are establishing, and I take it that there's no one. So maybe the board was running the whole process of establishing this office. And I was also worried about the goods and services that were not tariffs. So at least now I'm sorry, let's cover this.
Honourable James, I got your apology for that meeting is late. Okay, and after that, it will be Honourable Anne.
Thank you, Chair, and I apologise for coming late and missing the better part of the presentation. I have read the documentation, and so, as I understand it, the Office of Health Standards Compliance is a body that will, whose purpose is to, in fact, look at compliance with health standards as part of the broader National Health Insurance Scheme architecture that is consistent with what we see in the National Development Plan for making quality healthcare accessible to all. And so your function is a very important one. And you are the professional, so you set up the structure and this is the plan. And so I'd like to wish you good luck in setting this up. In terms of the broader functions, as you know, healthcare is a provincial responsibility. and the National Ministry of Health effectively operates as a super leadership in the health area, and it's done very well. Very, very capable minister. And it's a policy unit that drives down initiatives down through the system. And the weakness in our system is the provinces. Not all of them. I recently visited both Northwest and Limpopo and found fabulous people working there. But they really struggle because they don't get support from the provincial ministries. And so what you are creating here is a national facility. This is a national body, not a provincial body. And you have to monitor and enforce compliance in a system where you have dysfunctional provinces taking care of healthcare. Okay? So it's an extraordinary responsibility you have. And the question is, what happens to your compliance recommendations? And if you, let me give you an example. I went to Puerto Hospital, run by an extraordinary CEO, Dr. Ramatola. She's an extremely capable woman. And she's turned the entire hospital around. It's completely clean. It's well staffed. They know how to deal with some major responsibility in the area, including dysentery, for example. Every month she struggles to get her medicines. And while I was there, she didn't have a month's supply of nevirapine that she needed to use. And so she haggles. She called another hospital within the province or outside of the province. This is not one episode. This is constant. Struggling to get medicines. Capable hospital, capable leadership. They can't get the medicines. There's something wrong with the distribution system around medicines. And you're going to discover this, clearly, because you're going to point people to monitor compliance, a whole range of things. Visit hospitals, I think is a very good thing. And you come across that and you have to fix it. Under circumstances where some of the provinces, not all of them, some of the provinces are just dysfunctional. So I'm sorry, it was long-winded, but to say, I'd like to hear from you, how are you going to deal with that?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me first of all apologize for coming in a bit late. I had an engagement.
I just wanted to check what's the Honorable's name.
As I said initially, that those that who came late won't disturb the presentation. I would appreciate if you can introduce yourself. The last speaker is Dr. James, who is also the member of the committee. And you introduce yourself.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I am Ahmed Mansour Sheikh Imam, and I am a member of this particular portfolio committee on health. Some of my concerns are, first of all, we talk about the basic conditions of Employment Act, and that's where I have one challenge or one question, because it is my understanding that medical staff, especially interns, are working up to 37-hour shift at a time. And I would like to know how we're going to address this, because I think it is common knowledge that anyone working for 37 hours without a break is not going to be able to do justice. Added to that, I have one concern, and that is, was there ever or will there ever be a survey to find out the mortality rate at night compared to that during the day? Because I often hear, very often hear that people have died at night rather than during the day. And I've always been very curious to know whether there is either a lack of professional service at night, or whether we go to sleep, or what happens. But I wonder whether at any given time there will be such a survey to see in the interest of the people that we serve. Is there something wrong, or is, you know, in terms of that? The other problem is that how do we employ, how do we ensure competency in terms of people's qualifications? Because I am of the opinion that we normally use organizations like SAQA, which is the South African Qualification Authority, who themselves have already admitted that their system is flawed and not foolproof. And that is driven by, I'll give you an example of the one, was it a neurosurgeon, who's been throughout the other countries, performed even in this country, took us to labor court, won the case, and found out he was not even a medical practitioner, whereby they have now gone live and said that they need to relook at the entire 10,000 foreigners that have been employed. I must also add that as far as the nursing staff is concerned, I think that my understanding is that in government hospitals, they seem to be working very long hours as well, 13 hours at a time. I'm just worried whether that is. The other thing is this, whilst we have budgeted, and I appreciate that you are a new organization, you're going to have some challenges, your presentation is good, the intentions are good, my concern is whether we're going to achieve those targets, and if not in the near future, you know, a more realistic approach to when we can actually expect to be able to achieve those targets in order to provide a better service. The other challenge that I had is, in terms of what role would you play in ensuring that institutions, and these are private institutions that are training medical staff, nursing staff and things, providing them with qualification and certificates, which are registered to the Health Professional Council, and we are saying they are not qualified enough. So what role would we play to ensure that there is some control over these institutions that are not taking on these students, providing them with a certificate, the Health Professional Council is registering them, and then they're not going to be able to work, and I'm of the opinion there's something like about 30,000 people that are out there that have got these qualifications and can't work. So that is basically a little bit of my input, but I think the other issues have been covered by my colleagues. Finally, I just want to talk about compliance, and yet it is a problem. It seems to be a problem at all levels that there's no consequences for non-compliance. And maybe what should happen is we should hear from you, the committee. What is it we could do, and to what level we could take this to ensure that level of compliance is there, and that if people do not comply, that there will be consequences, and maybe the consequences should be restricted to those entities. If you take a particular hospital and people do not perform there, you have management there at the highest level, the necessary action must be taken. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I've just got two questions. One is a comment, one is a question. That you are to ensure that you reach every citizen of this country in all four corners. It doesn't come up, maybe, I don't know, it doesn't come up that in that you ensure that happens in terms of, remember that this country is largely rural and farming communities, so that they're aware that there is an institution of this. I would imagine your question would be that you are playing oversight, you are ensure that happens, but as much as we are doing that, I think the onus also is on yourself to ensure that those people, it's an experience that we are having, that at times rural communities and farm workers are usually forgotten, I'm sure, not because it's deliberate, but because of, but I do think that is also important. Now, I just want to add, there's one member who talked about hospital boards, but I also want to add clinic committees. On page 7 of your, I want you to clarify this for me. On page 7, there's a budget item that I don't understand. Cutting across some of right, for instance, out of from Program 1, the Office of the CEO, that is what something that is called social contribution. You go again to page 47 under the compliance management social contribution. I'm not going to read the amount. I'm just 48 social contributions. What's that? If you can explain to us what is meant by that item, it is called a social contribution. I hope you have picked that up. The time I'm reflecting pages. Page 37, you go to page 47, go to another page, page 40, when you look into, in fact, it's in all your programs. We're going to break for, so as to allow, we're only going to break for 10 minutes, to stretch up tea, whatever. When we come back, we are then expecting you to respond on all the questions that have been asked. Thank you very much.
Hey, this is video. What are you doing? I'll never get to this.
And Honourable members and our guests, I think the 10 minutes is over. May we start?
Let me mention the fact that we appreciate these questions,
Some of them are difficult, others we think we can explain. But that we must be given the privilege if we are not able to satisfy the members, the opportunity to respond, maybe writing at a later stage. We have quite a lot of slides and documentation we've been going through to understand the questions themselves, because that's also extremely important in answering. I think the issues that are critical and I think are extremely important, one of the independence or arm's length from the Department of Health is something that we've also been extremely concerned about as a board. We are born of and through an act. The office, in fact, the Department of Health is setting up the office. Physically, we are still in the Department of Health. We are in the process of what we call then transition, finding new premises, and there are negotiations right now to find offices, rented space to move out physically from the Department of Health. When we were formed already, the Department of Health had started some work on the issue, because the minister was concerned about the public reports on these issues, such as poor performance that has been mentioned. So there are already inspectors who are on the ground, who were employed and working with the Department of Health, who we are to take over. Even that process alone of transferring some 40 members of staff from the Department of Health to the office is in itself an important labor issue matter, which is taken care of, and we have people as well. Now the specialization comes in, that within the board there are people who will be looking, a committee that looks after HR and other such matters. To some extent, the issue again of independence is also problematic. Pointed out quite clearly that we've been legislated into a very complex sort of an environment where the responsibility of providing health services resides, in fact, not just the responsibility, but a lot of within the provinces, and we are now legislating or working from a national point. How do we, and in fact, maybe some of the statements that were mentioned about weaknesses in enforcement are around that kind of thing, and maybe we need to step back and look at the legislation, the existing National Health Council, the input of the this committee itself to help assist us to go around some of those problems. For example, if an institution is run by the Department of Health, whether it's at whatever level, when we do enforce or have to enforce that legislation, if there are challenges to that decision, we are probably going to end up with quite a lot of challenges, maybe even from the public sector, about those decisions, and they must be seen to be, we use the word fearless in our vision, because the scenario is extremely difficult in out there when you look at the public and the private sector interaction. The issue of taking a decision to close an institution, for example, or a part of an institution is not an easy one when that institution as a whole is offering a certain service which is not available depending on where you are. So some of the issues that you raised are things that are of concern, are things that we need to work through. I think this is why I said we might be given the opportunity maybe to respond in writing to some of these matters. The issue of the ombuds was raised as inverted commas brackets, where is the ombuds? The ombuds person is actually appointed by the minister, has a budget from parliament through the minister, but is housed within the office. Now, that ombuds has not been appointed. We've had discussions with the minister, and the indications are now that the ombuds will be appointed by January next year. it's difficult for us to build a structure or functional structure of an home, but when the person or the individual is not even there, we can only interpret, and I think there are some things we'd like to understand. We have legislation, we have a strategic plan. Are we interpreting this legislation properly, given the scenario in our country again, where you take decisions that can be challenged legally up to the highest court? And maybe we are too cautious, but we like to be cautious at the beginning so we don't get caught up, and we'd like those comments about where we stand in terms of integrity, independence, and the powers that we have in moving forward. And the last general comment I'd like to make is just the fact that as a board, we do have sort of targets as to when things should happen. For example, when you said we are going to advertise, it sounds very vague, but our budget is still held by the Department of Health, because we do not have a chief financial officer appointed, and we therefore cannot run our budget directly. So we're still in a transitional phase, which makes it difficult. I appreciate the comment that we did not specifically refer to the DFMA. I'm extremely conscious of that, and I think those are some of the things, when you said other legislation, not to leave it sort of vague. There are some legislation which you have to be very clear about. We talked about health-related acts and organizations. The Health Professions Council is extremely important. The labor relations and many other things, we did not put it down here. And now that you've picked it up, we probably should then sort of insert it. And the last comment, general comment again, is discussing with the minister exactly the issue of how are we going to reach everybody and how do people complain. At the moment, most complaints in this country are run through one, a call-in center. A call center, you're a national, you're sitting somewhere in Pretoria. Not everybody's got a phone to call. Got a problem right now. We do know that the hospitals, through the provincial governments, have also got their own complaint system that is going. We're not quite sure how well it works or whether there are any consequences that are there. Those are some things we need to study. How is the current system working in terms of dealing with complaints? We would like to put a better system and discuss that with the minister. And it is possible that we will have to establish, when the ombuds comes in, ombud offices at district level. That's how expensively we would like to go. But that is budget. We've got to put that on the plan. It does not exist at the moment because the ombuds is still seen as somebody sitting in Pretoria. So those are some of the issues we have to tease out and be able to answer you very soon on what are we planning to do by what time. We have a board meeting on the 10th and 11th of September. We hope, as I said, we're still going to have to be given the go-ahead to advertise the post that at the top level. When the organogram that you see there is not covered by the budget, the budget we have was given to us. We're a new entity. It says there's 90-something million. See what you can do with it. We have to work within that limited budget. We cannot even employ all the people whom we have put down here. And therefore, we have to select key posts. One of them, for example, is the chief financial officer, so that we can have access to budget, make sure that we're compliant with BFMA. Children will not release that money unless we can show that we're competent in terms of dealing with that organization. But we could go on and on, but I think the other members will ask the more specific, answer the more specific questions. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I don't know who's taking the first bite. Martin?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few general comments, which will also demystify some of the questions raised here. The Act is very clear, the Health Amendment Act, in terms of what we can and what our powers are. And, there is an expectation from the public. It's no secret that some of the healthcare delivery systems in our country is not up to public expectations. And the public has this expectation from us to start acting like yesterday. And but that is very clear as what we can do. And in relation to what Honorable James has raised, is this contradiction. The action takes place in provinces. The Act clearly says that in Section 79.1e of the Health Amendment Act, we can recommend. We can't go to MEC X, Y, and Z and say, thou shalt not. We can recommend based on our findings, but it's been. And it is therefore useful when we engage with parliamentary bodies like yourself and in provincial legislatures to appeal for an enhancement of your oversight role, because this is where power resides ultimately. You wrote the laws. And this is where, when we recommend, you can actually extract high level of responsibility based on the acts that you've written. But that is clear, we must recommend. And therefore the vigilance here will have to become a much more collaborative effort between the various stakeholders, the legislature, ourselves and so on, so that these things are done to the advantage of our people. There's also something that you need to appreciate that, and having been a civil servant myself for 17 years and at some stage being in a parliamentary bench for 10 years, I never appreciated how the bureaucracy has actually become more complicated. Since we've been appointed, Prof. Mazurai, just to get our structure approved took us the better part of 6 months. It had to go to the minister, the public service commission, and so on. So we wanted to appoint a staff like yesterday, but it had to go through all those processes before we were put legitimately, not only to receive the minister only approved the post-establishment last week. Now, anything outside that would have been problematic for us, Honorable Matlela, because we didn't have the appropriate approvals for the post-establishment. But there's a agency within the board. As a matter of fact, a lot of the vacuum in the absence of a top management layer was felt tremendously, and I don't want to, the records will reflect that the board was intimately involved in blocking some of these non-operational matters as opposed to the oversight role. And we're not making excuses here. All we're saying is that since the table has not been laid, we're in a much better position to give attention to the people issues, the process issues, the systems issues, so that this ship can get out onto the open waters. Honorable Member Vomik, making an important aspect here, the whole question of leadership and governance, and these type of things are becoming, because everything stands or falls on leadership. You can have the best plans in place, it's how people at the coalface lead those processes. And I'm always astounded by the level of dedication of some of the leaders in the healthcare space under very difficult circumstances. And unfortunately, normally profile the exceptions. But as a rule, there's some very, very dedicated leadership out there that's doing their best to drive these processes. But in the Senate's world, it's a question of predictability. There's almost an accepted standard when anybody walks into their door, what he should expect from the leadership, from the operational people there in the hospital, and this is what we try and inculcate through our through our inspections and the reports that we write, so that that standard becomes mainstream in all healthcare activities. Carol will give more detail on what the mock inspection results were, and now we've already seen the shift in subsequent on some of these things. But now, the biggest thing, like staff attitudes, they can't change through one or two inspections. That's a process. But some of the other things, we've definitely seen a shift, and perhaps you can give much more adequate detail about that.
Carol, I'll give the final thing. Could I take some comments from the other board members?
Firstly, thanks, Jefferson, for inviting us to be part of this presentation, and thanks to all members for their questions and comments. I'm going to take one comment or question around patient rights and whether the board has addressed the voice of patients and the board, but also how we're going to be reaching out to other communities who are not predominantly staying in areas who might not have access to this information. Let me start by saying that initially when the board was appointed, one of the key primary voices that we needed in the board to be addressed was, as we are saying in our strategic plan, that we needed to address the primary health care provider of the services, as the voice is important in the board, but also the voice of patients themselves or service users themselves. So there are two members of the board, one member who represents the voice of healthcare workers and the voice of patients. So I'm one of those, I'm representing the voice of patients, and Ukombe Tembeka is representing the voice of healthcare workers, particularly nurses. So that already has been addressed. But secondary is to the fact that the board has also planned a stakeholder engagement so that we can disseminate information about where we are, the status of the board in terms of we have been appointed in January, what has been happening. And we are doing that because we understand that the public is desperate for the office to function as in yesterday. So to update the public on what has happened, both not just the public, but also the media as a medium of communication to even reach areas the way we can reach. So through the public and stakeholder engagement, there is a priority given to people who are vulnerable to some of these activities that are happening in health establishments, but at the same time, established NGOs. So it's not only going to be targeting certain NGOs who are already national, but also targeting patient groups within who are participating in health clinics, in health care committees or hospital boards or other establishments outside of the health clinic boards or hospital boards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members and parliamentarians. I am also very honoured to be here. This is also my first in Parliament, and I have been someone that always been talking for patient care. And somebody just recently from the state said to me, now you're going to Parliament to have your say there also. Thank you. We've been working the Enforcement and Certification Committee has been working regularly on the regulations and trying to get things and addressing all aspects of patient care so that patients do not come to hospital and fear what's lying ahead of them. Things that is the environment, the budgetary principles, their dignity, which is critical. We debated on specifically these terminology, what it really means, what does it mean to be professional, what does it mean to treat patients with dignity. And we've already heard about the attitudes, which is a major problem and which will take many, probably years. I've been saying to students, and we have to talk about a bit on academic, about the attitude is really the problem of the 21st century. Everybody, it appears as if the youngsters are growing up with attitudes, and so it's strengthened within the work environment and in the hospital environment. So these are issues that are being addressed, and we've really extensively addressed the rights of patients. And it will be a major challenge to meet all of those rights within in that environment, a clinical environment, with challenges with the provincial governments who are still saying today that we don't need extra nurses. We have enough nurses in this very province. They seem to think that we have perceptions of the shortage of nurses. And it is a fact that you need not only have nurses there, but you also need competence. Because that is the other problem that we are faced with, that people are being employed that are incompetent. We are employing people that are layout workers, people that have just got kind of a crash course. These are things, issues that will be addressed by this board to look at, that people are competent, because there will be measures in place to measure the care being given to patients and that we have, because the certificates won't be given. And that's the sad
because the patient's safety and quality of care will be seriously compromised if we do not act as a board. And it is, as with my colleagues have already been saying, that it's difficult, you know, when we cannot really enforce what we would like to see happening. But certainly, if you have to open up a newspaper and see that 10 babies have just died because of infections, what do we do about that? And that's the wake-up call. Those are the things that we will be addressing. And this will be a process. It will take a little long. It's not going to happen overnight because we do have financial constraints, not only in this country, it's worldwide that we have. And to suddenly put everything right within a hospital or a clinic, a primary health clinic, it's not going to be easily done. It will be a process that this has to go through. We discussed when we had our last meeting about two weeks ago about the rights of the disabled. It's long overdue that we had to see that the constitutional right that it is the constitutional right of all citizens of this country to ensure that everybody's rights are met. And that is one of the things that they will have to see to that. Even the hospitals will have to see that they need those rights. These are just some thoughts about the regulation, which soon will be with the minister and will be out for public comment. And we would like to invite everybody to do their comments, to make their comments, because nothing is perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for the kind of questions that you have posed to us. With some of them are really wanting us to go back and think deeper about the issues that you have raised. But for me, what was striking from the questions that you're asking was to say, yeah, I think we really need to work together. This will only work insofar as we're able to work together in the different areas in which we are in. Because within the board and in the committee that deals with personnel matters, the honorable members must understand that, like, UCO gave a report in terms of where did the department started working around this. And therefore, we had people, for example, inspectors that were employed by the Department of Health. And we are now a public entity. And they came, for example, the inspectors. And now those employees, they need to be transferred to this public entity. One thing that we said we need to avoid at all costs was to employ people who were employed by the Department of Health who were then stuck by dissatisfied with the condition of service that this entity is going to come up with. That process was very tedious because we had to look at what conditions are these people under right now because they are employed. And therefore, when they come over to us, they can't come to something that is lesser than that we have. But at the same time, we don't have enough funds that we have been given to make sure we have that balance. So that has been a very tedious exercise to then begin to say our conditions of service should not disadvantage those that are already coming from the Department of Health. So that's the area that for us, at least, I'm glad to say, though the report, we didn't give a thorough report, we have gone really far to begin to address and come up with the conditions of service. And if you look at this way, it is the work that really need highly skilled people. And therefore, if you, and those people can come cheap, unfortunately. And therefore, those are all the things that we're dealing with when we're looking at the conditions of service for this entity. But at least we are somewhere. That is why now we're able to be able to say now we're able to employ and so forth. And so forth and so forth. So I just wanted to explain that part of the personnel. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mindful of the time, Madam Chair, we will ask the CEO to just respond briefly to some of the outstanding questions. Thank you. Again, emphasizing that if we cannot, we'll have to write them down and respond appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and honourable members. Thank you so much for the inputs. They really were extremely valuable, and we do accept that, as in any document, that could do with a review. So thank you very much for the comments that were made on the document. I just wanted to touch on just three or four things because the board members have obviously dealt with the majority. I think the most important message that some of the questions arose from is the understanding that this body cannot fix the system. It had no direct authority. No regulator has direct authority, because otherwise it wouldn't be a regulator. A regulator has to remain independent and objective. If it gets involved in fixing the system, then it is no longer objective. So, for instance, the issue of management weaknesses was not referring to the office, it was referring to the situation out in services. Okay, the problems that the office is trying is part of fixing through its very specific role. So I have a number of questions about that area, and I think it's very, very important that there's two players here. There's those who deliver services and there's the regulator. The second point is that there are other regulators. So, for instance, some of the questions were related to the Health Professions Council or the Nursing Council. This body needs to work with them to deal with things like intern registration or incompetence or lack of skills. So there needs to be coordinated action. It's not the direct responsibility of this particular regulator. Just a couple of questions really of clarity. Also, the office does not have a role in monitoring the SDAs, the negotiated service delivery agreements. It monitors health establishments. So it doesn't monitor higher level delivery, except indirectly through measuring how services are delivered on the ground. So perhaps at the most important level of delivery, it monitors how users receive services. Okay, it does not directly monitor how those services are set up. We have spoken that the minister's approval was received last week. The clarification, I think, has been indirectly made that there is no staff establishment at this moment. The expenses incurred consist of the inspectorate, which has been paid out of the budget, and the posts that will be filled. So between now and the end of this financial year. So that is why there is a compensation of employees reflected, because of the posts that are in the pipeline to be filled. The social contribution is workman's compensation, performance bonus, relocation costs, and unemployment. That is what that line consists of in the budget. There were just some questions about the findings of the inspectorate to date. I mean, that's quite a big question. Just to summarize, the inspectorate has done nearly 900 inspections over the last 3 years. As part of training, we are not claiming that those are objective, accurate benchmarks. We are training the inspectors, but it has given us information. I think all of us know that there are some provinces that are weaker than others. However, what we have found is in all provinces there are excellent institutions. And in all provinces there are weak institutions. So it's not that one province bad, other province good. I think the issue of individual management is probably what is driving those differences. The NHI pilot sites, as you will remember, were selected on the basis of disadvantage. They were not selected to be the best. So no, not all NHI pilot sites are complying, but the last question is, have we seen improvement? As was reflected in the strategic plan, in some areas the improvement has not been as great as we would have liked, but the office only issues a compliance notice. They don't fix things. They say, you are non-compliant in the following areas. This is what you must correct. But the National Department has been concerned that the response has been slow. However, lately, in the re-inspections that we have been doing, we have noticed improvements. And we have also got qualitative feedback from individual institutions about how the national core standards are influencing how management goes about their business. So the numbers are small at the moment, but we are beginning to see that there are improvements. I think most of the rest have been answered. It does cover hospital boards and clinic committees. The standards do cover both requirements for both of those institutions. Thank you very much.
Just check if there's anything you found. Everything is covered.
Well,
so I think we'll leave that to the chair and the members of the committee. If we've covered everything, they will tell us the things that are outstanding. But I do want to just pose a challenging question. Is I did mention this legislation, we've been appointed in terms of this legislation. We see some challenges already, which is slowing us down because we don't want to get caught up somewhere because we didn't look at every, you know, dotted IT. And we perceive also that there's some limitations which may not achieve what we all looking forward to. So we're going to ask a question. Are you happy with the way we interpret or understand this legislation? If not, correct us. Or are we happy with the legislation itself that it will achieve what we wanted to achieve? Thank you.
I do think that as in my own observation, as a new institution, obviously that is in transition. How your presentation and your response in some of the questions that have been asked, you are coming across as an institution that is quite aware with the challenges that they are. I'm raising this because personally I'm happy that the voice of people that are serviced and those that are providing service in the health sector, that voice is there. With one witness, and it's a weakness that we all do. Health, yes, I understand, health is not only about doctors and nurses. For it to make and break, there's the administrative side, which also we must try to balance that. But in that administration, and I said it in the budget speech, in that administration, the category that all of us look down upon, and it is the category. Just to remind you, so that when you go and do your whatever, the category, two categories, a general assistant and a black. You can never, you were there, Prof, you can never give medicine to a patient in an empty stomach. You can never go and prepare a patient in theatre for whatever procedure. When the theatre is dirty, when instruments have not been cleaned, when linen is not there, we were talking together. What has happened now in our public institutions, I was shocked, I was stunned when I went to a hospital in PE and I was told that I must bring a blanket and a pillow for my father. So I'm saying those categories, as we are moving forward, for us to ensure that, as you'll be doing that, ensure that the question that you are asking, I want to respond. I think to respond on behalf of the committee that yes, we are going to work in us playing our oversight. We are going to be looking again, because remember that this act, this law has been passed by us. Maybe the challenge is in the implementation of the act, and as people that are implementing the act, when we are playing the oversight. I do think that you are to sensitize us so that ourselves will look into that, whether it is a fair observation on your side, so that we don't seem as people that passed the act and now we, because we passed the act mindful of what is it that we want that act to manage and achieve. But in you, as people that are implementing it, there are challenges or gaps that you are identifying. It's your responsibility, as we will be going over there, to say, this was next year, you are going to come at the end of the, when you start your new financial year, you are coming back to us. And we are going to remind you. Remember, when we are asking these questions, not asking these questions, and tomorrow we forget about them. We are, our questions, because we are going to judge and measure your work and how you implement your mandate, or how you have responded today, I'm just sensitizing you, how you, your layout of your documents, the demand for, Honorable Nashalela also mentioned that the thing will be cut and paste, if I understood him very well, avoid that if it is there. We are one committee in the administration that is very sensitive on that, and rest assured, we do read our documents. So, in monitoring in this M, until the end, in the first year, We are not just going to be asking questions and we receive these documents, we forget about them. We always go back and initiate. So I do think that for your first, for your visit and the first encounter with the portfolio committee, I think you've done relatively well. There's still more times that you'll be shown the door. Avoid that. So it's possible when we see that, now, the new is, yes, we do show people the door when they think that they are personal, we are playing here. We're not playing here. We are serious. And I do think that my last point, a comment is that as you are picking up that there are those that are doing work, there are those that it's not the same, it's not that at all, but you have got the responsibility to assist government on this issue of transforming the mindset of health workers. I'm raising that because I am a health worker that was supervised, managed, controlled by a system that was corrupt, that never, ever ensured that my mindset is transformed. And the African National Congress government is what it wants it to happen, that health workers, we're talking about health, they are transformation from a general assistant to a CEO in a hospital. Its mindset must be transformed that now we are to provide services, we are ensure that our people in terms of getting health are equal. So I thank you very much. Apart from the memorial service, I think it's important that I also reflect towards the issues of the committee that we must deal with. So I think members are also comfortable. I can see that there are two faces, hands that feel free to. And what I will also appreciate, Prof, is that when you bring all that, the structure of the board, who is, as Congressman Becker is dealing with health workers, and I hope not only nurses but irrespective, right, because he's dealing with communities, so that we know who is dealing with it, so that when we receive some complaints and whatever, one knows where to, because as the chair, I do receive those. I see it's honorable my seller and honorable Ndaba, those are the two, and I hope they are not going to be only. Okay.
Thank you. Mine is just a caveat, and that the national government is responsible for developing and monitoring policies, legislation, and norms and standards. The national government is responsible for that in the health sector. But provincial government can discharge their constitutional rights by passing provincial legislation in the areas of health services, but remain responsible for the implementation of the national policy and functions. So Section 44 of the Constitution gives the National Assembly the authority to pass legislation and with regard to functional areas of concurrent competence and to prescribe minimum norms and standards. So since you are not fixing the system, but you work through norms and standards to see to it that they are complied with, if that is not the case, then you come to us and say, there's no compliance here and here, because if they defy you, when you tell them that you are not complying here and there, then you come to us, we write legislation, if need be, to correct that and give you teeth to bite. That's what we're here for, isn't it? Right. Now, here you say something like you visit the hospital, whatever, after 4 years. I maybe it's a mistake. Just look at it, and I don't want to get involved with that one, but you can't say you visit an institution every 4 years. It's writing, so check that document. Page 13. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
The information is correct, sir, through you, sir.
Come down.
You'll pardon me if page 24, the years were corrected when I was outside. Because this document is for in public domain. So I'm worried if we are going to produce documents that are incomplete. Thanks.
Oh yes, it was right, page 34, I think 2014. Okay.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, she's correct. It was noted, but she's right by saying, make sure that it is changed on the document. It's actually 2014. There was a second one as well. I can't quite remember. The CEO was noted that and changed it. It means we have to reissue. Because once you have the incomplete information. And what I'm not, can I just check if the members have got a copy of the national core standards? That's for sure. I think we just had to give you all the information from which we work. And maybe to generate more questions also. Thank you. National core standards.
No, thank you very much. We think we have come to the end of the presentation. We'll write as individual members just to get some information. We'll write through the office of the chair. Feel free to respond on those. Members know what to do when they are to go through that process. But it's not the end now that we have come in front of us. As we'll be going through your documentation, as you have also rightfully said, Prof, that we mustn't afraid to do that. And thank you very much. The only thing that you got rain today in Cape Town. Thank you very much. I would appreciate if members of the committee can just remain behind for 5 minutes. Thank you. Mm-hmm.